Southern California's Inland Talk Express is KCAA News Talk 1050.
It isn't decaf, hazelnut, French vanilla, or even mochaccino. No, it's hot, bold, and unfiltered.
Oh, yeah?
That's right, lady. It's Morning Brew, the Inland Empire's wake-up call with Fred Wallen and JBK. Two guys who have nothing but high-octane commentary from the world of sports and politics. Sometimes poured from the same pot, and sometimes not.
Seriously, right?
Yeah, I'm very serious. Where do you stand? They'd like to know, though, as they wrap up the week's big news from the gridiron to the gridlock that we call Washington. Fred's from the left coast, JB's from the right coast. Do you see where this is going now? Good. Because Morning Brew is now on.
One way or another, I'm gonna find you. I'm gonna get you one way.
Hey, wake up, Southern California and around the world on the web. Welcome to the Morning Brew. Our phone number, we'd love to hear from you, 1-888-909-1050, 1-888-909-1050. Producer Nick John, and you can also email us, sportsfred@aol.com, sportsfred@aol.com. Anything in sports and politics, and we definitely want your opinions, we want your thoughts, and probably if you disagree with us, we'll probably give you more time than if you agree. Again, 1-888-909-1050, 1-888-909-1050. JBK's off today, a little bit sick at his advanced age, I understand that. Chris Klein will be joining us in a few seconds. You know, before we start talking about the World Series, NBA lockout, and a whole slew of things in the world of sports, I have to talk politics here because I don't have that many laughs in my life. You know, my wife and I have the Sheltie, and the Sheltie makes us laugh sometimes, makes us cry some other times, scream some other times. But what makes me laugh is every time the Republicans get together for one of these debates. Now, on Tuesday, we saw it again. Now, the one guy who's bright wasn't there in John Huntsman. The other idiots just talked and talked and talked. It almost seemed like a group of high school kids screaming at one another at the lawn when they're 15 or 16 years of age. Even Ron Paul, who I despise, said he felt like walking out, and I wish he had. But the bottom line is this. Listen, I'm not a big Barack Obama fan. He has shown me, anyways, in a lot of key issues, Guantanamo, health care, that he's backed down to the Republicans very, very soon and very, very often. So he's not the guy that I would support if he had to do it over again at this point. But let me ask you a question. On one side, you got Barack Obama. On the other side, you got Michelle Bachmann, Herman Cain, and Rick Perry. Now, with the world, might be able to go up in smoke in a moment. Who would you rather have the finger on the button? Barack Obama or Michelle Bachmann? Barack Obama or Herman Cain? Barack Obama or Rick Perry? If the world was just about to blow up, who would you trust more? I'd love to hear from you this morning, and I got to tell you the truth. I want to hear from a Republican. Tell me why in the world or how in the world you could trust a Rick Perry, Herman Cain, Michelle Bachmann, or the other four idiots who are up there. 1-888-909-1050. And again, I'm not a big Barack Obama fan. I think he's caved to the Republicans on every key issue. So it's not a question of that. It's just a question of who would you really want in control? Maybe not any of them, but certainly not the Republicans. Would you? Let me hear this. 1-888-909-1050. You can email us, sportsfred@aol.com, sportsfred@aol.com. All right. Baseball, World Series, Game 3, usually the key game in a long World Series. The third game usually has the winner, not always, but in many cases. Texas at home against the St. Louis Cardinals, knotted at 1. Of course, we know what happened on Thursday. Albert Pujols, the best hitter in baseball, he made a mistake, and he wouldn't talk to the press afterwards. And Tony La Russa had some comments about that.
I think we've got a history, unless people want to correct me, of being very responsible about being accessible. But I think the press should be fair. I sat next to Brian Bartow on the plane, and he was 40 minutes before anybody let anybody know that they wanted to talk to those guys. It's getaway day. We're leaving earlier today because we had an early workout. They wanted to pack for their families. If anybody had said, we need to talk to Albert, he would have stayed.
Well, here's the problem with that. And Tony La Russa knows better, and he's a fine manager. I think the third most wins in the history of the game. He's apologizing, rationalizing. Albert Pujols, the star that he is, knows he wants to be talked to every game, after every game. You know that. I know that. The world knows that. So basically, Tony's giving us BS. I'm a little disappointed, to tell you the truth, in Albert Pujols, because historically, he hasn't been that type of guy. 1-888-909-1050, 1-888-909-1050. Let's go to Chris Klein for JBK today. Chris, what did you think of Albert Pujols not showing up for the post-game comments? He certainly would have if he had knocked five runs in or hit a couple home runs. How come he's getting sort of a pass here from Tony La Russa?
Well, good morning, Fred, and I agree with you. He's being childish. Had he had a big game, certainly he would be out there chatting with the press. This is a cop out, especially considering, you know, the team's in the World Series. You have, this could be the last year of La Russa and even Pujols with the Cardinals. So you think you'd like to have a little PR going on, and you know, this is unacceptable from where I stand.
Folks, if you have any thoughts about that, love to hear from you. It's 1-888-909-1050. And again, you might be an Albert Pujols fan, but you can't possibly have supported his non-show at the post game. I mean, you've got to get up on the dais and make your comments, and you take the heat when you don't do well. And again, you know, I saw him yesterday, and he admitted, you know, that it was totally on me, and I made the mistake. And 990 times out of 1,000, I would have made that play. I made a mistake, and it's on me. End of story. That's all he would have had to say when he was up there, but he didn't want to go up there. And Tony La Russa trying to rationalize it makes no sense to me, because we know better, you know better, and we could discuss that on the morning bureau. So, Chris Klein, Mr. C, back there, your thoughts with no real big media market clubs involved, the ratings down, no Philadelphia, no New York, no Los Angeles, no Chicago, Texas, and St. Louis, and obviously St. Louis has got a lot of people who followed them for years because of the great signal from KMOX historically, but still, it's not the same as Los Angeles, Philadelphia, New York, or Chicago. Your thoughts about, from the media perspective, the World Series so far, knotted at one game apiece?
No, you know, back east, of course, you know, without the Yankees and Mets, Boston, as you mentioned, even Philly, personally, I haven't even watched any of the games, any of the World Series games yet. I hate to admit that, but there's not a lot of interest. And, you know, having, being in the restaurant industry and managing restaurants for years and bars, we haven't even had the game on or had any requests to have it on. Even in the bar areas. So
so what you're basically saying is a regular season NFL game has much more interest than the World Series? Not even close, right?
Not even close. I do have to tell you this. I did something I haven't done in a few years, and I was naughty, and I actually put down a few dollars on a parlay for the Jets and walked away with the money this past Monday night. So to me, that was a much more interest to me, because I had a vested interest, and that was a good game. But I would like to try to catch at least one of the World Series games. So I think the Rangers have put together a formidable team. They're in it 2 years in a row. That has to say something. Whether you're a fan or not of the Rangers, you have to sit up and take notice. What are they doing to put this successful run together? And, you know, with a little bit of this mini discord going on within the St. Louis organization that you mentioned earlier, you kind of got to wonder if that in itself is going to give the Rangers an edge or a little more momentum.
Well, I tell you what, playing in their home park, they're built for power. It's a small park in Arlington. St. Louis has power in the middle of the lineup, obviously, with Pujols and the rest, but the Rangers 1 through 9 have power, and that's what they're built for. Take a look at their stats. They got like five guys who have 25 to 35 home runs, and that's pretty tough to beat. Kyle Loesch, a good pitcher during the regular season, has not pitched well in the playoffs for St. Louis. Matt Harrison, hard-throwing lefty going for the Rangers. I think you got to lean toward the Rangers. The odds 185 to win 100 if you like Texas, 100 to win 165 back if you like the Cardinals. It's pretty tough to bet on the Cardinals here just because the park is built for the Rangers. You take a look at their regular season record, I think you can't disagree. Cardinals have gone farther than I think most people would have thought when they were 9.5 games back in early September, and they shocked Atlanta and shocked the world, and congratulations for that. And again, La Russa, one of the best managers out there, but I think they're overmatched here physically, and that is even with Josh Hamilton having that groin pull that makes him far less than 100%. Our phone number, folks, you want to talk about that or what we opened with, talking about would you want Michelle Bachmann having her finger on the button? She believes in rapture. So if you're not religious, she's going to go to heaven and you're going to go to hell. 1-888-909-1050, 1-888-909-1050. Chris, I don't know if you're politically oriented or not, if you had a chance to watch any of the Republican debates, but I think they're laughable. I mean, it's like you got seven high school kids screaming at one another and you couldn't even hear half of it. Did you watch any of it, and is it worth a few laughs to a lot of people out there?
Yeah, I did. I caught a little bit of it, and to me, I saw where Rick Barry was very, say, intrusive, but he wasn't really giving Mitt Romney a lot of respect in answering the questions. For my dollar, I'd say Mitt Romney looks the part, but you know, is there much substance, you know, behind the man? I don't really see any clear cut winners or anyone that's leading the pack on the GOP here. So I'm a little worried myself. Politically, I'm not necessarily a party man. You know, certainly our buddy JBK there said, I'm king of riding the fence. I try to really look more at the candidate rather than the party and kind of evaluate each situation individually. Now, he would call that waffling, and I do understand that, but I just can't unilaterally side with a party or even just, with a block of candidates.
Chris, if you're a waffler, Romney would be your perfect candidate. Because he's one of the biggest wafflers I've ever seen. You know, they've got tape of him saying one thing, changing his mind the next week, changing his mind the next year. You know, on health care, where he says now he never thought of it as a national thing. Of course he did. He's quoted on Face the Nation and Meet the Press and all those shows 4 or 5 years ago, basically saying, yeah, he wants to make it national, no question about that. And now, of course, he never wanted it national, and it was in his first book, and he took it out of his second book. So, I mean, if you're a Republican conservative, you can't believe anything he says. Then you've got an idiot like Michelle Bachmann. Herman Cain, we find hole after hole in his argument, 999, which means nothing, 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 basically. And if 84% of the public will be paying more taxes, it makes no sense whatsoever. But he's out there trying, and now he's getting hit hard from all sides. And Ron Paul, who's a mean man, says he'd almost walked out of the Tuesday nonsense. It's hard to believe that these are the best we have from the Republican side, I got to tell you. And again, you're talking to somebody, folks, listening to somebody who's not a Barack Obama fan. He's disappointed me more than you can imagine. And yet, if it's Barack Obama with the finger on the button or these morons on the other side, to me, there's no question. But I'd love your thoughts. If you have any comments, give us a call. You can also email us, sportsfred@aol.com, sportsfred@aol.com. You know, back to the World Series. This is sort of for me, it's interesting because obviously Joe Buck from St. Louis and Timmy McCarver, longtime catcher there, and he lives in St. Louis. It's got to be sort of difficult. Difficult to sort of walk the line if you're announcing a national game when your heart definitely with the Cardinals. Again, you haven't watched any of the World Series. I wonder if the folks out there would have noticed any prejudice or slanting one way or the other from those two guys. I'm not a big Joe Buck fan, and I don't know if Chris, I don't know if you're old enough to remember Jack Buck, but to me, he was one of the great football announcers ever, and of course, a fine baseball announcer too. And I think Joe has been given a license to steal, basically. He's not that good, yet he's been doing national games like forever. It's hard to believe, but I guess the word entitlement plays a role in broadcasting as well as it does certainly in other aspects of life.
Well, there's no doubt about it, and I'm not a big Joe Buck fan either. It just doesn't, you know, it doesn't warm me up such as, say, Phil Rizzuto did years ago. I recall listening or actually watching the first game that actually Tim McCarver broadcast as an active broadcaster. I think it was about 1981. It was just coming off his, he just had retired, and I believe it was for the Mets, but it was the first game, and I thought that he had kind of folksy, a natural charisma.
Yeah.
But out here, what I've been most impressed with is a guy like Kenny Singleton, who was very well spoken and a natural. Joe Buck, I don't know, just, I don't say rubs me the wrong way, but it just it doesn't add any pleasurable aspect to listening to the game. It kind of takes away from it a little bit from work, you know, in my opinion.
You know, talking about taking it away from a little bit, in your opinion, my opinion, a lot of people in Southern Californians' opinion, Frank McCourt and Jamie McCourt apparently have come to an agreement, and Frank's going to have to give her a check for a mere $130 million. Now, what I found interesting in this is, Chris, let me ask you a question. If somebody would ask you, how much money would you need in the bank to feel secure for the rest of your life? What number would Chris Klein, Mr. C, come up with?
I would say about $3 million.
All right, so you say $3 million. I actually said $1 million, you know, when somebody asked me that a long time ago. Jamie McCourt, folks, are you sitting down if you missed this? a year or so ago, she was quoted as saying, somebody asked her, how much do you need to feel secure for the rest of your life? And she's in her 50s, late 50s, I think. She said, $250 million. Now, I don't know if you thought she was greedy before, but if you read that and you heard that, you'd probably say, this is a greedy blank, 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 blank. Now, the question is, she's only getting half that, $130 million. Is she going to be secure enough the rest of her life with a measly $130 million added to her bank account? Chris, what do you think?
Well, you know, I don't know how she's going to scrape by on that. Everything's really goes into context, Fred. It depends what your lifestyle has been in recent years. You know, I think we've all, most of us anyway, myself included, have had to live on less in the last few years than what we did. I know, you know, I don't bowl even when I did 10 years ago, and a lot of Americans might not. So you know, you become accustomed to either a lavish lifestyle or a more austere pattern. And what really gets me about this divorce, Fred, is I know we had talked about it, and you and JB had talked about it about a month and a half back, about a purported $1.2 billion deal for the team. Now, I had spoke to JB the other day because, you know, from an attorney standpoint, and I asked him, now, how could they make a divorce settlement when only a month and a half ago you had this purported deal, which you said basically was, like a bargaining chip. It was a kind of a fake deal to inflate the value of the team. So if that was real, how could you, you know, actually even get a settlement worked out? And, you know, if it's not real, where did it go? This seems like it just went, came out, and disappeared. So that was my big question. How did they get a settlement done? What happened to this big deal? Was it real? Wasn't it real? And if it wasn't real, could there be any legal ramifications for throwing it out there? You know, that they actually had some kind of offer. Is there any, you know, is that illegal in any way?
Well, it's an interesting question. I think the Dodgers probably on the open market, McCourt loses the team, would go between $800 and $900 million. McCourt owes like $500 or $600 million as far as his expenses right now. But so he'd come out with $300 million. He'd give half of that basically to Jamie, and he'd walk away with $150 million profit. He bought the team at $425 million. He'd be getting almost double to. So he's not going to get $1.2 billion, but let's say he gets $900 million. So he'd still be able to pay his bills and come out of it okay. As bad as Frank McCourt is, and as greedy as Jamie McCourt and Frank McCourt have proven to be, I don't blame them. I blame Bud Selig. You don't give these kind of people a door to steal from you. And that's basically what they did. And I'm going to tell you something. I mean, right from the start, Frank McCourt had to borrow money from Fox to buy the team from Fox. Now, if you're Bud Selig and if you're awake, if you're a person who can actually walk upward and can actually think for himself, if somebody says to you, I'm going to buy something from you, but I got to borrow the money to buy it, you probably have a red flag pop up in your mind, but apparently not to Bud Selig. And the rest is history. And they've taken their salaries. They've drawn an extra $100 million out of the team. And you see the results on the field. And let me ask you a question, Chris. How many homes do you have?
Just the one I'm living in.
Okay, so most people probably just have one home. Maybe you need two if you travel back and forth from New York to L.A. or something like that. Okay, I can understand two homes if you've got that kind of money. These people had eight homes. The judge made them sell one. Now they're down to seven. Now, wouldn't that be a telltale sign that these people are nuts? I mean, it's like let them eat cake, Marie Antoinette. I mean, the prices go up at Dodger Stadium, and they've got seven or eight homes. I'm the biggest Dodger honk there is in the world. I mean, I was brought up, and I saw Duke Snider at home run his very first game. My dad was a Brooklyn Dodger fan, but enough's enough already. It's Bud Selig for giving these two carpetbaggers the right to buy the team in the first place.
Fred, I agree with you. And if you look within the last couple of years, when you have Nolan Ryan taking a large bulk of the ownership of the Rangers, and certainly you see the success that is, that's lent itself to, I mean, he's a legend in the game. You want somebody like that involved. So who's McCourt to actually come in here? You know, they're turning it more into a business. People that are, you know, leveraging, you know, a dollar and getting $5 worth of buying power, and that's just wrong. I mean, you have to look at not only the resources that the potential buyer has, but what is their background? What makes them qualified to actually run this? It's a business, but it's a sport. It's a pastime. It's a livelihood. What do they really know about the game? Not just about the dollars and cents aspect of it. Because if you don't understand the game, you're not involved in the actual game. your chance of being successfully, you know, managing the money and the dollars of it, it just comes off as being greedy, as you mentioned, raising the prices, making the fans suffer, and everything becomes a dollar sign. So I really applaud people like Nolan Ryan, who've been in the game their whole life.
All right, that's Chris Klein for JBK. We'll come back and discuss the NBA lockout, and we'll discuss more Republican nonsense when we do come back on The Morning Brew right after this.
Fred Wallen and JBK on Morning Brew. Fred Wallen. Go up to him and tell him that Tom Brady will never be half the quarterback that Vince Ferragamo was. And you got a friend for life.
The NBA's infamously egocentric commissioner seems more hell-bent lately on demeaning the player than resolving his game's labor impasse. How else to explain Stern's rants in recent days? To any and everyone who'd listen, he has ultimately knocked union leader Billy Hunter, said the players were getting inaccurate information, and started sounding Chicken Little claims about what games might be lost if players didn't soon see things his way. Stern's version of what's been going on behind closed doors has, of course, been disputed, but his efforts were typical of a commissioner who has always seemed eager to be viewed as some kind of modern plantation overseer, treating NBA men as if they were his boys.
Brian Gumbo on Real Sports earlier this week on HBO, and of course they'll repeat that the next 4 or 5 weeks, so you'll have an opportunity to watch it if you are so inclined. I think Brian Gumbo, one of the best sports guys for the last half a decade, or well, 40 years. Used to write for Black Sports before he got his job at NBC4 here in Southern California, and that's how it all started. As far as his comments about David Stern, I don't think David Stern is racially motivated. I think David Stern is power-oriented. And by the way, this is The Morning Brew. We'd love to hear from you. 1-888-909-1050, 1-888-909-1050. You could email us, sportsfred@aol.com. And JBK's off today. He's a little bit sick. He's very sick. He's coughing and sneezing. At his age, you can understand that. I don't know how much time he's got left. And Chris Klein will either come back with us or not. We had some technical difficulties with that. But anyways, your thoughts about Bryant Gumbel and with David Stern. My thoughts, again, would not be from a racial perspective. I just think it's from a power perspective. I think David Stern wants power, likes power, and I think he's gone crazy a little bit, and I'll tell you why. The NBA is not the National Football League. Most of us could live forever without ever watching another NBA game. I would save a couple hundred dollars. I wouldn't have to buy the DirecTV NBA season package. That's fine. You know, I survived the no hockey in 204, 205, and I saved the couple hundred dollars there. I definitely could do the same with the NBA. David Stern's got it wrong. Most people don't care. Now, there are some smaller markets where the only sport that takes place professionally on that level would be the NBA. Paul Allen's the Trailblazers, perhaps, in Memphis, Oklahoma City, places like that. But in New York, Chicago, Los Angeles, Philadelphia, we got other things to do. We don't need the NBA, do we? Tell me where I'm wrong. Tell me where David Stern's right. Listen. They started at 57%. The players were getting 57%. The owners opted out. Fine. That's great. The players have gone down to 53, plus they're willing to give up like $500 million a year off the top. So basically it's almost a 50-50 split right now. How much more do the owners want? And I'm going to tell you something else. It doesn't, it doesn't have to be, from the players. They've already given enough back, in my humble opinion. Here's what you can do. Now, I don't know how much money. David Stern said 22 teams lost money. I don't believe him because I haven't seen his books and the players haven't seen the books of each individual team. Let's say 11 lost money. Okay, fine. Memphis lost $5 million and Oklahoma City lost $5 million. New Orleans lost $7 or $8 million, whatever the case might be. Maybe the Lakers made $100 million. Maybe the Knicks made $100 million. I don't know how much, how many millions they made. You put it into a pot, and you distribute it better among the owners. You don't keep asking the player side for more and more. You share it yourself. Now, the league itself is not losing money. The individual teams might be. And, you know, I'm pretty good mathematically. So let's say David Stern is telling the truth. Let's say the 22 teams all lost money. Let's say that's possible. Let's say the 22 teams lost money. Let's say they averaged 3 million losses per team. Those 22 teams lost $65, $66 million. Fine. And the Lakers made 100, and the Knicks made 100 million. And again, I don't know these numbers, but let me just, and the Bulls made 100 million, and Miami made 100 million, and Dallas made 100 million. So the league made 400 million. Well, share that. Don't take it from the players. Share it from your pot. The players have already gone down from 57 to 53, plus they're willing to kick back like a half a billion a year for expenses, things like this. So it's basically a 50-50 split right now. I'm not on the player side. I'm not on the owner side. I think both sides are greedy. And they've raised the prices in most of the arenas around America. The average person can't go. If you go to Team Market in Chicago, they'll tell you, family of four going to an NBA game is like $400, just like the NFL. How many games can you go? How many games can you take your kid to? My dad took me to maybe 10, in the 60s, maybe to 10 Dodger games a year, maybe to 5 Laker games a year. That's why I became a sports fan. But he was just a manager of a meat market. So the bottom line is, how many games, based on the same salary structure, could he take me to now if two of us would spend $200 a night? We'd spend maybe $25 when we went. I understand the numbers have changed, but you know, the tickets were like $3, $4, $5, and the popcorn and whatever, and the parking was $3 or whatever it was. So maybe we spent $20, $25 10 times and 5 times for the NBA, and now it would be five times that, 10 times that, 20 times that. So how do you become a sports fan? How does a dad take his kids to a game if he can't afford to go? So I can live without the NBA. Chris Klein, can you live without the National Basketball Association?
Absolutely, Fred. What really gets under my skin, not only politically, but within the sports realms, is that you have these folks that are the financial pros, the MBAs, they've got the degrees. This is what they do for a living. The government can't come up with a budget that works. These big businesses, these sports teams can't come up with a budget that works, and they're going to complain that they're not making money. Well, I'm sorry. When you can dictate what you're going to charge for tickets, what you're going to spend for your talent, what you're going to negotiate on your marketing and your television end of it, and what you can kind of gauge conservatively what to expect for attendance, what's going to drive that end of it, and you can't make it work, shame on you. You shouldn't have bought the team. You shouldn't be involved in it. And the same thing with our government. If we can't get people in there, they're going to make a budget that works. This makes no sense to me. You and I, you know, we're average Joes. We try to live within our means. We know one thing for certain. If we spend more consistently than we make, we're up the creek. So what do? We punish the fans. Not us, but, you know, as fans, we get punished. You know, for going out spending our hard-earned money, or even on pay-per-view events, we get punished. So that's wrong, and that's when I say to hell with the NBA. You know what I mean? I'm more of a baseball guy or football guy. I like the NBA, but I can live without it for a season. You know, we got to set a spike in the stand, and you know, we've got to make a stand here and say to hell with it. We can do without it for a year. I know I can.
All right, so here's the deal, folks. Again, I don't believe 22 teams are losing money, but I'm giving Stern 22 teams are losing money at $3, $4, $5 million a team. Let's say those 22 teams even lose 100 million. But how about the other, 8 teams who've made $300, $400 million or $500 million? I don't know the exact number, but you know that it's a lot bigger than that. Here's the thing. In the National Football League, most of the money is made on the national broadcast. And so they share that among all 32 teams. All right, in the NBA, they make a lot of money in national broadcast, but they actually make more money, and the difference comes in on the local broadcast, meaning that the Lakers and the Knicks and whatever. And I think the latest CBA, I think they've got to kick in like 30% of that to the rest of the league. And so it sort of balances, but it doesn't balance. I think that it all should go into a pot. So if the Knicks are getting $100 million from their TV rights and radio rights, and the Lakers are too, and Memphis is getting like $10 million, that is shared in one big pot. And again, what we're saying is the players have given back enough, in my humble opinion. Have the owners share it among themselves. And if you can't get that done, shame on you. and as Chris says, don't punish the fan. But see, I don't even feel punished. To tell you the truth, I don't care. And I think most people or some people wouldn't care if we never had the NBA again. To tell you the truth, I love college basketball a whole lot more. We got college basketball until March. I'll survive those few months in between. Your thoughts about it? And I grew up on Jerry West and Elgin Baylor, but I can live without the NBA and their greed, and it's greed. Love to hear from you. 1-888-909-1050. You can email us, sportsfred@AOL.com. Can you live without the National Basketball Association? Chris, they'll tell you. Again, I don't follow the NHL as closely as I used to, and I used to do pre and post for the Kings and the Ducks. I don't follow it anywhere near as closely. When the league locked out in 204, 205, even the league guys will tell you the league has not come back to where it was before. And now you've got a situation in the NBA where Dallas shocked the world last year, where you've got the guys in Miami, where you got maybe one or two more good years from Kobe Bryant in Los Angeles. Knicks have the two big stars now. If you're going to blow the league, I mean, shame on you, right?
Absolutely. And, Fred, the way the drafts are set up is the worst teams get the best draft picks as kind of an equalizer so that you can maintain, well, a modicum of a consistent quality amongst the teams and make it more competitive. So when you have your, you know, if you say, well, the attendance is down, the viewership is down because it's a lousy team, I think they have to be careful what they're doing with the draft picks. You have to utilize that, have some homegrown talent too. If you don't have a big market and you don't have a lot of money in the coffers, then you have to, you know, have to go old school and get some homegrown talent and build it up and hope to God that your more successful players at least will stay with you maybe 3 or 4 years before they go up for that big contract, perhaps in a big money market. And that's what really gets me. You know, they put things in place so that you can kind of get away from having teams that are consistently in the cellar, and then they would be blaming that on the fact that's why the team is unsuccessful financially.
Yeah.
So I think you really need to utilize that a little bit more.
Yeah, let's go back to the opening thing that we heard, the verbiage, David Stern, Brian Gumbel, and whatever. And again, David Stern has shown me no racial inclinations one way or the other, except for the fact that in the NBA, there are a whole slew of NBA head coaches who are African-American, general managers, presidents, owners, whatever the case might be, and that's the only sport that can say that, and that is under David Stern. So I don't think you can call him a racist. I think Brian went too far. But I got to tell you, when David Stern came out, hey, I guess we're going to miss some Christmas games, as if that would be like not having penicillin, or God forbid, that would mean like the world's going to end or something like that. Well, we don't have Christmas games. I guess we'll find something else to do on Christmas. Hey, Chris, would you find something else to do on Christmas if we didn't have NBA basketball?
I'm going to go back to what's worked all these other Christmases for me. A few gifts, friends, family, and I can't. I've probably watched maybe 10 minutes of a basketball game on all the Christmases put together. Because it happened to be someone else was watching it, and I walked by, I looked at it for a couple of minutes, and walked away. So I never schedule, watching a basketball game on Christmas. I never have, and probably never will.
You see, again, I think it's a case of these guys being up there in the cloud somewhere, presuming we care.
Yeah. We've got better things to think about. I mean, even if you're not celebrating Christmas, there's still better things to think about that time of year than the basketball, at least from my set. You know, if it goes away for a little while, that's fine. You know, we got to send a message a little bit. They will get this worked out. You know as well as I do. It'll happen. And then, you'll step back and go, what was the big fuss for? You know, this could have been done months ago.
You know, you read that there are hawks and doves as far as the owners are concerned. Jerry Buss is a dove. Mark Cuban, of course, in Dallas has already said, you know his stand. He's willing to concede on a lot of issues, even if it means getting fined and whatever. Mark Cuban's a dove. There are a few other doves, and they're like Paul Allen's in Portland is a major league hawk as far as this, where he wants more, more, and more. But take it again. Decide it and divide it among yourselves. There is a profit there. If David Stern's telling the truth, which he's not, and 22 teams lost money, which they did not, until I see the books, I'm not going to believe it. But let's say $100 million on the 22 teams that he says lost money. They lost $100 million. I'm going to repeat this. What about the other 8 teams? I want to know how much money they made. The league in total, the league in all, the league together made money. Bottom line, share that among yourselves. Players come down from 57 to 53. They're giving you another $500 million up front. That should be the end of the story, but you're getting greedy. I'm going to tell you something, I don't know if you've ever been in negotiation. I'm the world's worst negotiator, but I hate to be pinned down. I hate to be pushed because it's like I give in on like 9/10 of the time. But if somebody pushes too hard, then I fight back. And I think what's happening here, the owners are pushing too hard. Billy Hunter, the of course, the head of the players union, can't cave totally. So now he has to act a little tougher than maybe he wants to be to save his own skin, save his own job. He's making $5, $10 million a year, you know, as this job. He doesn't want to blow this. So I think the owners have gone too far. And what's going to happen here is now the players are going to stand up tough. And who knows? My gut feeling is we do not play basketball in 2011, 2012. And it's 80% owner's fault, 20% player's fault, in my humble opinion. Chris, your thoughts?
No, absolutely. I mean, what is the alternative? What are they going to do? You know, if the NBA players aren't going to play, what are they going to do? It's not as if, you know, it's a union job and you're going to call some other workers and they're coming in and take their place. You know, so you're in an impasse there. The problem here is that these people are operating it so much like a business. It's just a piece of their portfolio. Maybe it's a matter of pride that they make the team profitable. And you have to understand that there's going to be years it's going to be profitable and the years that there'll be losses. And, you know, if you got your skin in the game, you've got to be prepared for that. It's nice to you know, be profitable every year, but certainly in a down economy, the reality is that, you know, there are discretionary income. People aren't going to spend and go out there as much on the high-ticket items that we don't need, such as maybe merchandise, you know, sports merchandise are actually going to the game. So that's the reality check for them. And what's their alternative? I mean, both of these sides need each other. And at the end of the day, you say, we don't need either one of them. We can step back and take a break from it.
Well, so folks, let me just say this. Yeah. Again, if you're making $700 a week bringing home four, you can't go to a lot of NBA games and expending that four for watching pro basketball. And David Stern, you got to wake up to that. Your comments about Brian Gumbel, David Stern. We'll talk NFL when we do come back. And I'm still waiting for that Republican to tell me how the heck he'd allow Michelle Bachmann with the button back on the Morning Brew right after this.
Listening to Fred Wallen and JBK on Morning Brew. Brew. Loma Linda's lucky they don't have a Wall Street. Otherwise, they'd have to answer to one man, Fred Wallen.
Right. 8:49, and you don't have to answer to me. In fact, I'd rather have you disagree with me. Tell me you'd like Michelle Bachmann with the button, that's all. And I'd faint right here on the radio. You might not ever hear from me again if you tell me that. Maybe that's what you want. So give me a call and tell me so. 1-888-909-1050. You can also email us, sportsfred@aol.com. And producer Nick will get you on the air if you do dial us up. And along with Chris Klein today for JBK, we're talking this, that, and everything else. We'll talk the NFL in a moment. Of course, this afternoon in South Bend, Indiana, a rare night game for the Irish of Notre Dame against the Trojans of USC. Who do you like out there? The Trojans, about an 8.5-point underdog going in. I think it'll probably go down to the wire. I think I would take the 8.5. Meanwhile, if you're a UCLA fan, what do you have to say? Rick Neuheisel among the worst coaches in America. And just like I blame Bud Selig for hiring, for allowing Frank McCourt and Jamie to do what they've done to the Dodgers, I blame Dan Guerrero, athletic director at UCLA, for hiring Rick Neuheisel in the first place. How do you hire Carl Durrell and Rick Neuheisel back-to-back unless you're a mole for USC?
Fred, let me ask you this. Of course, I'm about 3,000 miles out here to the east. Not as familiar with what's going on with Rick Neuheisel. What would you say if you had to distill it down to like 30, 40 words? I mean, what's the biggest problem where you sit with Neuheisel? What, you know, would you keep him, get rid of him? If so, why? Because I'm a little unclear exactly what's going on with that. And
well, you find,
I know every week you kind of mention it. I'm really, what would you do to try to fix that?
Well, first of all, he's a cheater. He cheated at Colorado, got the school on probation, cheated at Washington the same way. We're not talking, folks, betting on March Madness. We're talking recruiting out of season, certain rules, as you know, in the NCAA, folks. And Rick can't live by the rules. And why he got hired here at UCLA, I'll never know, except that Rich alums, who seemed to think that he was the guy for the job, Carl Durrell had a much better record 5 years in than Rick has had 3.5 years in. Rick Neuheisel is for Rick Neuheisel. Rick Neuheisel can't even recruit a quarterback. He's got an offense that doesn't work with the quarterbacks he has recruited. Rick Neuheisel hired a new defensive coordinator, offensive coordinator for this year. You've seen the results. They're down 42-7 at halftime, lose 48-12 on national TV. It is a disgrace. Dan Guerrero is the problem. He listened to the Rich alums because Dan Guerrero came from UCI, and that's fine. I'm sure he was a good AD at UCI, but at UCLA he has stuck up the place, folks. UCLA and Stanford used to be the two schools that competed every year for the best all-around sports competition, male and female. Stanford's still up there. What about the Bruins of UCLA? When's the last time you heard UCLA won that championship among all the schools and all the sports? Not once, I believe, since Dan Guerrero's taken over. He's got to take the hit, too. So he hired Cardorell. He hired Rick Neuheisel. He's got to fire Rick Neuheisel, and then the Chancellor's got to fire Dan Guerrero. And I'm not in favor of people losing a job, but these people stink. These people are an embarrassment. UCLA on national TV, well, I couldn't watch it. I don't think you could, too, if you're a Bruin fan. 1-888-909-1050, 1-888-909-1050. Plenty of action in the National Football League on Sunday and Monday. First of all, what do you think as far as the Raiders, the deal for Carson Palmer? I don't think he's going to start. I don't think he should start. I think two or three days of practice, not enough for a guy who didn't play last year. I think you're really taking a shot. I think Kyle Bowler should be the way. And then they have the week off. And then I think after that, you can have Carson Palmer in there. But I think it was a good deal for both sides. Chris Klein, Mr. C, what do you think about the Raiders and Carson Palmer?
Well, I think you're correct there. He should have a week of rest, kind of a give him some time to not only shake the rust off, but to integrate with the team and how they take care of business. Not only what they've been doing that works, they're much improved team over the last couple of years. I think they went 8-8 last year, and they did a horrendous season and the previous year. Why not? You have to. I don't say burn a game, but you really have to give him a little bit of time, shake off the rust, get integrated with the team, and see what kind of what he's bringing to the table, what he feels needs to be changed as well. I think the Raiders, once again, much improved. They're not really facing a strong opposition this week. I think that's fine. I don't think KC's going to give them much of a run for the money.
All right, Don McNabb, is he all done? Of course, now Philadelphia, Washington, and now with Minnesota. Christian Ponder, the youngster from Florida State, will get the start against Green Bay, Minnesota's home. Would you have gone in that direction if you're Leslie Frazier and Minnesota, or would you have given the veteran Don McNabb some more opportunities?
Well, listen, Fred, the Vikings are already 1-5. This season's pretty much toast. So I would give McNabb the respect and the nod. Instead, what have we got to lose? Now, of course, we're seeing a lot of rookies this year, quarterbacks getting the opportunity to start. Give McNabb one more week. What is really the issue with McNabb, Fred? I mean, has he been injured, or is it more eroding skill set, or is it a lousy team? I mean, what's really the heart of the matter here? What would you do? Because I'm a little lost on why he's not being successful and why the team is only 1-5.
Well, statistically, last week he had a good first half, first good three quarters. They had dropped two or three passes on him. Outside of that, I mean, he was almost on target every time, but they didn't move the ball well, held Adrian Peterson to 39 yards on the ground, the best running back in the league. So what it basically means is he's not going deep enough to open up the running game for Peterson. They think that Christian Ponder will go deep, take more chances, and I think from that direction, you can't disagree, but I didn't like the fact that they were taking pot shots at him on Monday Night Football, Sunday Night Football with Chris Collinsworth. This is the end of him. This is the end of him. I just don't think that's right. He's been a good player, not an all-star, not an all-pro type, but not a Hall of Famer, but a good quarterback, and no better than that, but he deserves to go out with dignity. So, hey, Chris, well, Fred, this has been fun. I'm sorry, you got about 30 seconds, Chris.
Well, I just want to say they're playing Green Bay, who's undefeated, and, I think to make the game interesting, at least give the fans, the legendary quarterback to watch, if you will, versus a rookie. That's all I have to say. Fred, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me, and we'll catch up with you real soon. And, folks, it's been a pleasure. That's all I can say.
Chris Klein, thank you very much. Producer Nick, thank you very much. You can always email us, sportsfred@aol.com. JBK, get better. And, of course, you've got 7 days to email us. We'll talk about your emails on the air at sportsfred@aol.com. sportsfred@aol.com. Stay tuned to KCA all day and for all the action. And we'll see you next week right here, same time, same station. Until then, may all your thoughts be winning ones. Bye, everybody. Have a great sports weekend. Bye.
Fred Wallen and JBK. decaffeinated guys just telling it like it is.
Fred Wallen. He doesn't have a wife named Wilma, slide down the tails of dinosaurs, or even break his car with his bare feet. Now that's what we call Classic Fred.
KCAA is NBC Radio News for Southern California.
On the hour, every hour, Monday through Friday.
News of the world, nation, and region from NBC on KCAA, the Inland Talk Express.